Eric Maddox, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been 10 years since you were involved in the capture of Saddam Hussein. Can you reflect, give us some thoughts from what you think, how that 10 years went since you captured Saddam Hussein? There was such a tremendous amount of optimism and excitement, I guess, you know, when you depose the dictator and succeed in changing the regime in Iraq, which is what we went in to do. But how did it – we know how it went, but what do you have to say about how things unfolded from that point on?
Well, that's a full question. But from my perspective as a military member, I was Army Staff Sergeant at the time, it was an exciting time. We felt like we were going to fight for our country and we were going to take out a dictator who we'd all grown up knowing as a pretty evil man. And we felt that we were prepared, and we went in and we did that. We overthrew the regime. We started hunting down the high value targets. We eventually captured Saddam. But the problem, I think, it's just my opinion, is we didn't know how to end it because we had no idea how to rebuild a country. So we're left in charge. So the average Iraqi is looking at the U.S. military and saying, hey, you're in charge now. You rebuild this. And when it didn't get rebuilt and expectations were not met, they began to turn on us. And from that comes an insurgency. And that's where your elements of al-Qaeda began to crawl into Iraq and recruit disheartened citizens and also foreign fighters. And from there, it was an entirely new war. You actually have two completely different wars.
So there was the war against Iraq, the war against Saddam Hussein, the war against the dictator, removed him from power. And you said that you were prepared for that. You were prepared to fight that war. But then the second war started, the insurgency. Is that what you mean when you say there's separate wars?
The second war of a insurgency led by foreign fighters – and one in which we couldn't get a handle on the enemy and we couldn't win over the hearts and minds of the people. Because that's really – when you're fighting an insurgency, that's all you're doing. Is you either win over the hearts and minds of the people or you do not. If – are there any questions of why Afghanistan's going so terribly? It's because the Jairoa, the Afghan government – cannot win over – they're not winning over the hearts and minds, and the Taliban are. So it was an example, and it took us so many years to get a handle on it and realize, wait a second, we just can't play whack-a-mole with these enemies. We have got to build the infrastructure, and we've got to help build this government. And it took us several years to do it because we do not have experience doing that.
So when you said you were prepared to fight the war, I have a question about whether you were prepared to do your particular job, because you've said in your book and you've said in other comments that you've made publicly that you received actually very little training to go in to be an interrogator. Now, you served as an interrogator in Iraq. You interrogated many people leading up to the capture of Saddam Hussein. So were you prepared for that particular job? Because it seems to me like you didn't quite know what to expect.
When I say we were prepared, I'm speaking of the United States military in that, you know, we get the best training in the world. We had the numbers, we weren't exhausted in combat over several years. So myself, I was not prepared at all. I had never conducted an interrogation, and when I went over there and began interrogating, the techniques that I taught absolutely did not work. I was taught to interrogate soldiers with a uniform and a weapon on a battlefield, and these were individuals who lived everyday lives, had normal jobs, and were at home in civilian clothes, and there was no evidence against them, and the techniques that we were taught did not work. I did, however, have years of being in the Army as a ranger, as an airborne ranger, where you learn to adapt.
And so once you adapted – well, first tell us how you adapted. I mean, you made some comments about how, you know, you had to figure out how to put yourself in their shoes. and that is a tactic that helped you actually retrieve the information that you need. What do you mean by that?
It is the number one principle that I believe when I teach interrogations for an interrogator, you must completely put yourself in the shoes of the prisoner. Now, what does that mean? Well, we were taught that you should throw overwhelming evidence against them to try to break their spirit in order to get them to give a confession. And until you get a confession, we can't really trust anything that they say. Well, they're sitting here with civilian clothes and they're not actual soldiers, and they're in their mind living under Saddam's rule is whatever you do, don't confess. So this these two battles going on when in all actuality – they had problems. They wanted to go home. They had families that they were dealing with on a daily basis. They had jobs and responsibilities, and they needed to get home. And they would – they needed to – how do we do that? Well, they've got to help me. They've got to help me. I've got to take out their bosses in the insurgency. Well, if their boss is a family member and they said, well, I'm not going to help you take out a family member, then I've got to go above them. And so they would look at me and go, okay, here's the deal. If I give you my boss, they're going to know it was me and they're going to kill me. But, Mr. Interrogator, I got to get home. So if I give you my boss's boss and then some other individuals I know you're not aware of, go after them first, capture them, and then go get my boss's boss. They'll think those guys did it and I'll be free to go home. And I'll explain to this prisoner, you know, that's a great idea. And because your brother's on this insurgency, I need you to go get him and tell him to chill out. He's going to sit home and he's going to do nothing. I need you to go home and live your life. I know where you live. I know how to get you. But you're going to sit there and you're just going to live your normal life. Deal? And he's shocked. He's amazed. He's thinking, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in a prison of the United States government. But within 2 days, I have these guys walking home and they give us everything we need.
So in terms of the interrogation tactics then, obviously what it sounds to me is like you're empathizing with your prisoner, that you're putting yourself in their shoes, you're taking their perspective and understanding what it is they need. Is that something that you think then that we've extended beyond just an interrogation tactic to understanding what the people of Iraq need? Or let's say if we extend it to another conflict in which we've been involved, to Afghanistan, you know, are we empathizing with the Iraqis? Are we empathizing with Afghanis? Are we empathizing more broadly in our policy? Or is this strictly just limited to an interrogation tactic?
I really cannot speak to a broader picture. I can simply speak to what I had to learn and develop as an interrogator. It seems to me to be common sense. The difficulty is that I had to have commanders with the courage to let prisoners that they knew had been fighting against us, possibly even killed Americans, walk out the door 2 days after we captured them. And when the commanders trusted me that I could let them walk out the door and as a result of that to give information then we can move forward on that. But this was something that I did. I cannot speak on a broader picture. I will say, though, I do it in Afghanistan and it's just as effective because at the end of the day, people just want to go home.
But what are they going home to?
I
mean, it's a tough life they're living in there right now, right? Are they going home to insecurity? Are they going? Can you trust that they're going to go home and not continue to work against you in some way? I mean, how do you establish that relationship with them through that process?
Well, at the end of the day, the main thing is I have – once I gather all the information, I know exactly where they live. I know where all their relatives live. I mean, we're essentially it's a situation where I'm big brother.
You know them well. You know them very well, and they know that.
Dozens of hours with prisoners, and to Crete, for instance, is a small town of 20,000 people. I knew every single road, every neighborhood, every family, and when I tell them you're going to go home because I can find you, they would. Yeah, sure, they go back into a war zone, but when you have so many responsibilities, they would rather be out there because most of these leaders, these senior insurgent members, they're A personalities. So they need to take care of their family. So, it's tough out there, but they'd rather be free.
So as an interrogator, I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that some have been very critical of interrogation tactics that have been used. You have openly said that you did not use torture during your interrogations, that you did not torture any of these people leading up to the capture of Saddam Hussein. But then we, you know that torture does happen. There's significant evidence of that. And just to use an example of the capture of Osama bin Laden, for example, some have said, and I believe there's a movie about whether it's accurate or not, but that demonstrates that there's, you know, been torture used to gather information. Is this, what do you have to say about that? I mean, is this something that is common, not common, something that we should really be concerned about or not?
I think when you look at the history of torture over the last, let's say, 10 years, I would say it absolutely did exist in the early years. And I have watched, I've done 8 deployments in the last 10 years, just strictly as an interrogator. And I've seen the United States government, the United States military do absolutely everything in their power to get rid of it, to eliminate it, to remove it. It did exist. They tried to get rid of it, and there were slivers of it, and they learned from their mistakes. But at the end of the day, I have a philosophy that when you, as a commander or a soldier, possibly even an interrogator, if your men's life is on the line, they are going to do whatever it takes to get the information. So what we have a responsibility to do is to create and develop interrogation techniques that are far superior and more efficient than torture. That's the one way I can guarantee I will do it my way, even if I was allowed to torture. I will show and prove that the techniques that I use are faster and more effective. And if we don't do that, there's no way to guarantee that it's going to be completely eliminated.
So you've written about these tactics. You've spoken publicly about these tactics many times. Is this catching on? Is the U.S. military and the U.S. government using more and more of the kinds of tactics that you are promoting here?
I'm frequently asked to go teach, talk about, discuss my tactics. If elements of the military use them, I know that the elements that I'm ever with, they readily accept them and ask me to teach them. But I would say at the end of the day, 95% of the U.S. military interrogators do not know my tactics, and they haven't been introduced. And it's not because I'm keeping them a secret. I just haven't been asked to teach it on a broad scale.
So is this why we see insurgency continue today? I mean, we're talking 10 years now in Iraq, longer than that in Afghanistan. Is it your solution that will help us defeat
I think
insurgency?
There are so many elements that would need to be done to, if we go back in history or how we solve those problems. I would say that it's just so difficult to expect a military to do nation building. I do not think that responsibility should be put on a military. And I think we need to just really reflect and go, do we really want to go to this war? Because it is going to be a war. And what in the heck are we going to do when we're stuck having to rebuild this country? Is this really what we want? But yes, I do believe interrogation advances can help it. All sorts of things we could go back and look at. But I think at the end of the day, we need to really question, do we need to do this? Is it absolutely necessary?
So I have to mention here, as we're finishing up, your book, Mission Blacklist, is going to be made into a film. Robert Pattinson has been cast to play you in your movie. How do you feel about that? What are we going to learn? What are we going to see in this film?
I'm very excited about it. The one thing I've asked is that the movie be as real as possible. And working with Rob, that's the one thing he insists on. He always asks me, is this real? Did this happen? And so, you know, it's exciting. We'll see.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that in
Thank
the
you.
Next year.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on Worldviews, Eric. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's great to be back.